You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Debbie Downer is a lesbian.
Oh my God,
for
yeah,
sure.
Definitely.
Oh my God.
No offense.
She knows all about feline leukemia.
Debbie Downer is at Ginger's right now. She's like sidling up to someone and being like, you know, this place closed for a while and it's back, but will it last?
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that'll make you nostalgic for the days when being queer was less cool. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're dyking out with Naomi Regge about 90s queer subtext.
So much of it, the entire decade, was just queer subtext.
Yeah, we love subtext in our community. I can't wait to get to it.
This pairs well with our gay 90s episode, if you haven't listened to that one yet, which is more about the overt gay stuff, but also a lot of subtext. Again, just so much of it. In the meantime, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, please. Say something nice. We love it. Also, if you're able to do so, please support us on patreon.com/dykingout. That's really what keeps this podcast going week after week. We also have a bonus episode that you can get for just $5 a month. Every single week, we have an episode where we talk about all the things that we would rather have be behind a paywall. Sometimes we're just talking about queer TV stuff, but this episode, we actually reveal a lesbian pairing that a lot of people don't know about, and it was news to me, and I found it pretty exciting. So
I love breaking news to a lesbian. It felt good. It's a fun one. Head on over to Patreon. There's also a tier on Patreon where you can get free tickets to our live shows, and we have a live show coming up.
Yes.
Tentatively.
Yes.
We're doing it, right?
I think we're doing it. I'm boosted finally. So, more people are getting boosted. The numbers are going down.
We'll do masks.
Yeah, we'll do masks. Governor said that we're coming around the corner on this. So January 31st at Stonewall, we'll have the link for tickets up very soon.
Carolyn.
Yes.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
What's the gayest thing you did this week?
I got a couple of things. First, I'll start off with a fail, but then it turned into a nice night anyway. Cecilia and I were trying to go to Cubbyhole for the last night that it was open before it closes for about a month or so for renovations. So we wanted to support the bartenders. It was a very cold, cold night in New York City, and we got there and there was a line, and we got in the line and it wasn't moving. So Cubby was full. I'm like, well, they're getting plenty of support. I'm not standing in this line. We're going to leave. So instead, we headed over to Ginger's, which is my first time back at Ginger's since it reopened. And there were maybe, I don't know, six people in the whole bar, which I love. So Cecilia and I
very had cheers.
Nice time. Yeah. Chatting at Ginger's, running into Ruthie, local queer icon of Park Slope. Ruthie, shout out, even though I doubt she's listening to this podcast. I don't think she knows how to get podcasts. We've had to help her a lot with her phone.
Icons don't have time, you know?
She doesn't. But we now, every time we run into Ruthie, we all take a selfie together. So I'm hoping to have a great collection of selfies with Ruthie. Shout out to Ruthie. But the gayest thing, because this is very notable. It's a first for me. I booked a trip to Fire Island.
Yes.
I'm going to do it.
Doing the pilgrimage.
It's not going to be until the end of August, first week of September, but doing a house for a week.
Is it Cherry Grove?
In Cherry Grove.
Yep. But of course.
Yes.
Great.
Cherry Grove. It has a pool. I'm excited. I'm also very anxious. I mean, I still don't understand. Like, how do you get all your stuff?
What do you mean? Like,
well, like you can't have a car. So I'm like, how do you, like, for cooking food and stuff, like, how do you transport everything?
Yeah, I've seen people on the ferry with. I went once, and for the first time last summer,
I noticed here.
This one time that people had coolers on the ferry and brought as much as they could.
But then you have to carry it from the ferry to wherever your rental is.
It is easier, I'll say. Cherry Grove, there's like a little like, you're going to love it because you're going to feel it's a lot of like raised glass and like a boardwalky kind of like raised little situation. Like you're just feel like you're walking through this little oasis. Like it's fun. It's not gonna be that far. It's a tiny little area.
It's really the logistic. I'm like, okay, I gotta take a ferry, I can't have a car. What, you know, even trying to rent something in January was so hard to find a place. Everything in Cherry Grove is taken, so much that when we were talking about it before we rented the place, one of our friends who we're going with was interrogating some gay guys at Good Judy's because they said they were going to Fire Island. She's like, where are you staying? Cherry Grove? Are you taking up all the places from the lesbians on Cherry Grove?
Because they are. Okay. Yeah. That's just like a lot of
it's a problem. It's an issue.
Older gays will be there too.
Yeah.
And like opt out of the Pines.
Yeah. Well, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that. So, of course, I'll talk about it once I go there and have my magical Fire Island experience. But, you know, just feel relieved that I'm popping that literal cherry.
Cherry, yeah. There you go.
How about you? What's the gayest thing you did this week, Mal?
I booked a trip too, actually. I'm going to be going to Miami. And so we booked it. And then we go to the website and we're scrolling through their amenities and we notice there is an LGBT discount we were not aware of. And they said to honor this discount, they need you to call. And I'm just a little confused about how I get that rate for my reservation. Like, do I call? Like, how do you prove it? Do I call and just be like, hey, yeah, I'm sitting here with my partner. Very closely, we are linked by a carabiner through our belt loops. You know, right. Like, we're both here. We're both queer.
We're taking a break from watching the L Word. Put it on pause just to give you a call.
Yeah. And just inquiring about that queer discount. Now, before we proceed, our cats welcome. Okay. It's just so cute. Like, I love the gesture. I've never seen it. I've never seen that on a hotel website.
Yeah.
It was like, we love it. Like, they throw in extra discounts like throughout the resort for things. Like, it's like a part of this big overall like LGBT like discount package they have.
Does it say LGBT and they leave off the QIA because they don't want allies? being like, the A, that's me.
Yeah.
Yes, it's I'm an ally. Please reward me.
Good kind of like filter kind of tool. Yeah.
Great.
So that'll be fun. Other than that, I haven't done much because I've been binging Yellow Jackets. I make it seem like I watched it spread out over a week, but I binged it within 48 hours. Like, I finally watched it from the beginning.
Insane nightmares? How can you watch that much?
How dark is that?
It is very... I actually, after a couple episodes ago, I'm like, oh, I can't watch this at night anymore, because twice in a row, I watched it like last thing before I went to bed and had like really not great dreams.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't sleep. That's the thing. Like, we right. started it on Friday night and binged. We could not stop watching it. And we checked at some point. We're like, oh my God, it's almost 5 a.m. And we finally like made ourselves go to sleep. We couldn't sleep because it was like we had adrenaline from a scene even and yeah. took melatonin and then didn't even get like a decent amount of sleep and woke up and we're like, we have already fucked our day. Like, we're waking up in the afternoon. We might as well just devote today to it too. And caught up. Just in time for episode what? The second to last one.
Yeah.
So I like caught up just in time for the end of it to watch the finale, which will be tomorrow.
Which will have already happened.
Recording the next weekend. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when this comes out, yeah.
And then what do we do until season two?
I don't know.
Because there's 5 seasons, I think. I mean, as long as it keeps doing well, but the writers, when they pitched it, had like a 5-season arc for the show. So
beautiful.
Interesting. I'm so, when is The Wilds coming back?
Good question.
That'll tie me over.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, they should have them on corresponding kind of
it'll be like the Olympics, like Summer and Winter Olympics, but Yellow Jackets and The Wilds.
Yes.
That'll be my new Olympics. Love it. Well, I guess the Yellow Jackets kind of ties in because the flashback parts of it take place in the 90s.
And the Olympics are so 90s.
Right.
To me.
Yeah,
Are
the Olympics 90s? You know, I think people could argue against that, that the Olympics...
I remember I literally tweeted that once. The Olympics are so 90s. And was confused. I'm like, no one's liking this. I'm like, yeah, because that's your own personal connection to the 90s in the Olympics. You watch them then. But something about them is so like Atlanta, like when they were there. Like,
I mean, broadcast television.
Yeah, exactly. Before streamers, before more variety. I feel like more people watched the Olympics. Anyways, we're not talking about that part of the 90s.
Today, we are diking out with comedian, writer, performer Naomi Rege about queer 90s subtext. Naomi has written pieces that have appeared in so many different online publications like Vulture and The Daily Dot. Also, famously co-wrote a Christmas special of The L Word with me. And we'll get into more of that. Let's get to it. Naomi, thank you so much for being here today. We're so excited to dike out with you.
Hey, Naomi.
Hi. Oh, my gosh. Hi. It is really exciting to see you both on my computer again.
Yes. Our listeners have been hearing about you over the past month or so and being like, who is this mystery person? Well, actually, you've been brought up a bunch of times on the podcast. First, because of Rosie O'Donnell. Because you're how I met Rosie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I am a Rosie conduit.
Right, right. And then we co-wrote and co-produced the L Word Christmas Carol, where you famously also played Tina.
Yes.
Yes. So good.
Such a good Tina voice.
Oh, God. And it's hard to take that as a compliment to be like such a Tina.
That's why I went, a voice.
No, like years ago, my gay friend group was like talking about who would be who in the L Word. And they were like, oh, you're a Tina. And I was like, no. but I am. I accept it. I own it. I'm a Tina.
I think everybody is afraid to be the Tina, but, you know, depending on the season.
Yeah. I mean, I will say she's like, she's not really toxic, you know, like.
Especially in Gen Q. I'd rather be Gen a Tina Q, than a
It's
Bet.
The best version of Tina. Yeah.
much For like sure. Tina, I am great. Waiting many, many seasons of my life to become my best self.
There you go.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, Rosie. Oh gosh, that was so wild. So did I tell you like how I met Rosie?
No, I don't know this backstory.
It was such a long journey to get to Rosie, but I do feel like we manifested it.
Relate.
Yeah, we like, there is a Google Drive doc somewhere that has her name like at the top of a list of guests that we wanted to have on our show, which was the female gaze at UCB. So Janie Stoller and Caitlin Bitsagai and I all created the show, and we co-produced it and co-wrote it every month. And like when we were starting out, it was like, these are our dream guests. And if you go into the document, it's like Rosie, the gold standard by which we measure our success next to her name.
I mean, yeah.
It's the same thing for Dyking Out. Yeah. That was the gold guest. Yeah. I mean,
I wonder how many other places that is. Like, I wonder how, I mean, she is an icon. She's iconic. So like, I wonder how many.
A guiding light.
Yeah, truly. I DM'd her on Twitter, I want to say in like 2015. So it took about 2 years, which I think is similar to your timeline. Maybe your timeline was a little longer.
It was a little bit longer. There were some points where I gave up with the assistant, yeah. and then her filming schedule was taking off, and it was too hard to coordinate. But once it happens, isn't it glorious? Isn't it worth the wait?
Well, it's so exciting. And I will say that like, I like to make things happen that people think are like kind of impossible. Like, for better yes. or worse, I like to just keep trying, you know? And like, there was something not just really satisfying about getting her on a show, but also like every time, because we were DMing her directly. So every time there was a little interaction, right. It was like, oh, she's here. She's here. She's talking to us. You know, it was like, you know, once a year, a check-in. She's like, love to. I think her first DM back to us was just two words, love to be on your show.
Right.
You
know? Right.
So yeah, but she's an angel, and like, wow, like what a pro. Like, she just made everyone feel so comfortable. I mean, that was such a like organized chaos kind of show, because the premise, for anyone listening who has never been a UCB cult member, it was basically a spoof of daytime talk shows like The View, which obviously Rosie was an amazing host of. And our central like idea was, what if instead of 5 co-hosts, we had like 15? So we always had like 15 or more women on stage at a time. And Rosie just like, I thought she was going to kind of be like, well, what is this? But she was so chill and just like, so like commanding, but also like gentle and inviting. Just like, what yeah, a cool right. gal. Yeah.
It was one of the best shows, I mean, easily one of the best shows that I'd ever been to at UCB. And I remember thinking, like, this must feel so good for Rosie, because at this point, Trump is already president.
Oh, right.
And I'm already worried about her mental health and her spiraling on Twitter. And I'm like, she has to be like in a not great place right now. And then she comes to UCB, and not only does everybody on stage adore her, but everybody in the audience, like, people really turned out. There were people who had been on the Rosie O'Donnell show as kids.
Doug Weidick, yeah.
And just like super fans were there. People were wearing like the Rosie O'Donnell jackets. I brought my koosh ball pencil. Like,
yeah, I have to say, so you obviously grew up watching the show. Do you remember Doug from the show? Because I do, because I watched it as much as possible. Like, if I was sick, I was like, oh, thank God I'm sick. I can stay home and watch Rosie. Yeah. And like, she would, you know, she would really make kids like feel like, hey, I'm a part of things. And I was like, gosh, maybe one right. day I'll go on the show. And Doug got to be on it twice. And I remember watching and be like, who the heck is this kid? Why does he get to be on this show more than once? And then like to have him.
Was he the Harry Potter expert? Was that his thing or no?
I don't remember what his thing was, but it was such a funny full circle moment, because then, yeah, Doug was there. He had like a Rosie O'Donnell show jacket, and he got up. Yep. Like, Rosie did like a whole like Hamilton rap. Truly, it was 2017. Yes. It was really 2017. but Doug like got up and like, as she was saying, like, my name is what? Like Rosie O'Donnell. He turned around and like pointed. He had been beatboxing for her because he's in that like North Coast, yes, like improv hip hop group. And he turned around and pointed to the logo on the jacket. And everybody, wow, was like, ah, it was this like crazy moment. And also, instead of feeling envy and resentment as I did as a child, I felt love. I felt love. I felt like, oh, what a beautiful moment we all get to share. Like, we all just love this thing. It was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've told this story before, but where at the end she like looked at me because she saw me like fangirling in the front row the whole time and said, here, come give me a hug, and like your wife too, and then said, gotta hug the lesbians. And then she did the same, though. I thought she was just hugging my friend comedian Lauren Hope Crass, but she also said to her, gotta hug the lesbians. And then next time I saw Lauren, she's like, do I give off a vibe? I'm like, no, I can't believe she said that to you.
Well, she's lesbian adjacent. She's sitting next to a gay couple. Rosie can only hope that the lesbians are front row, right? I mean,
right.
Oh my gosh. I have to ask my friend now if she said that to her too. My friend Anna was in the, yeah, audience with her girlfriend.
Oh, it was like as you were hugging, she said it sort of in your, yeah, ear or something.
Maybe that was her line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a line and stuck a good to one. It.
Just going down the row. Gotta hug the hugging lesbians. Men. Gotta hug them all.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yeah. Yeah, hug the lesbians. Why not?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, okay. Which is worse? I mean, did you feel seen and validated in that moment? Because there's like something really tender about that to me. Like,
oh yeah, that was the highlight of my life up until then. I like burst into tears as soon as I stepped out of UCB. I couldn't believe that that moment had happened.
So I think it's best, you know, if you're in a position to hug the lesbians, to just assume they're all lesbians. You go down the row,
right?
And you say it, because when you hit the correct one, it's gonna feel so good. And like one straight girl walking, yes, around questioning her sexuality and presentation for a week isn't gonna hurt anybody, you know. Oh, good.
I love it.
Oh gosh, yeah. Oh, Rosie, well, what a light, what a gem.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about Rosie forever. We might actually with our topic, but before then, can we ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Naomi, what is the gayest thing you did this week, if not recounting this story?
I'm giving this probably more thought than it needs. I baked a banana bread, and then I was like, is banana bread gay? And I was like, there's something about it that feels really queer to me. I don't know why banana bread, yeah, feels really queer to me, but I think what's actually gay about it is that it was like, not only that, like I cooked a soup and then I made a chili. And then like at 5 p.m. on the next day, I was like, oh, it's time to bake a banana bread. Like, I just cannot stop like this kind of soup and baking cycle that I'm on. And it feels really gay to me. I don't know why.
I agree with you. My gay girlfriend makes banana bread a lot. And let me tell you why it's queer. There's something resourceful about it. Like if you buy a, mm-hmm, lot of bananas, mm-hmm, and you notice they're starting to go bad, you don't dispose of them. No, we're ethical, sustainable queers. You're going to make something out of them in that state. You don't throw them out. And that's why banana bread is queer, among other reasons, probably.
I was going to say, also, one time I had sex with a woman, and afterwards, apparently, she baked banana bread.
Okay, brag. So brag. Like, Carolyn's, yeah, had sex.
Must have been.
Okay. Good for you.
You know, the gay sex led to gay baking. That's trying to make the connection here.
Also, okay, wait, this is also, I make a lot of playlists, like more playlists than anyone needs to make. And I made a playlist that has a song in it that's like about soups. I mean, I think there's like a sexual connotation to it. It's like, she's like, I'm making all my soups. I'm making all my soups. You're not getting my soup. I don't know. It's such a weird song, but it feels really gay to me. And like, yeah. I'm just going to add that on. Second option.
Gorgeous, gorgeous girls love soup. Have you seen on TikTok? I can't even get into it if you hadn't.
No.
Oh my God. Have you been hearing people say gorgeous girls?
Yes.
Yeah. That came from a video of this TikToker and her friend were just at a diner eating soup. They look queer, like the original people behind that sound that's taken off, and they're just, you know, doing close-ups on their soup, scraping their bread, and they're like, gorgeous, gorgeous girls eat soup. We love soup. And then people have taken the gorgeous, gorgeous girls, and then there's been a very much a yassification of that, and it's become like a queer audio bite.
Oh, that's so funny.
There's also that whole, like, the queer soup night thing I went to.
Yeah.
I feel like soup is also queer, yeah.
People tell me about these, like, soup meetups, and I hear they're happening, and no one has ever invited me to one, but I hear there's, like, a whole
next
thing.
Next time I'm letting you know, yes.
I think there's, like a soup club, like a gay soup club, and I'm like, what? But also, it sounds really stressful to me, because, like, what a hard food to, like, transport and share and... Yeah, maybe that's why I haven't been invited, because I have soup anxiety.
Soup anxiety.
I will say, yeah, I felt like we didn't get there that late and the soup was almost gone. And I started having a lot of anxiety because I'm like, well, I didn't eat dinner thinking I was going to eat, you know, all the soup I could. And now I only have this tiny little like half a ladle full of four different kinds of soups that were there. I'm like, this isn't going to cut it.
What's your favorite soup? Go.
Oh, gosh. So many.
Tom Yum.
I loved. Wait, is that the spicy? Yeah.
Like the lemongrass.
The spicy lemongrass.
Yeah. Tom Kha is the coconut milk, mm-hmm. right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Love Tom Yum soup. I love a chicken tortilla.
I think mine is carrot ginger. But you're reminding me, I once like tried to map all the signs onto soups. Like which sign is which soup.
We're all Capricorns. We're
all Capricorns here. Yeah.
That's actually the gayest thing I've done this week. Going on a podcast, it's extremely gay to only be with the same sign as yourself. Like that.
Yes.
Yeah. It's God, three Capricorns on a podcast.
Gang gang.
Should we do our taxes? Like it's January.
That's so funny. I just made my to-do list and put that on it. I was like, get it done by end of month.
But I'm trying to remember which soup I said Capricorn was, and I can't. Oh, I think we're borscht. We're borscht. Yeah. We're borscht.
Which that's is great.
One of my favorite.
I like
soup.
Borscht.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. You get a dollop of sour cream in it.
I don't know if I've had borscht.
Mm-hmm. I finally had it at that place in the East Village, that pierogi place.
Oh,
you're talking about
Valselka?
Yeah. Love yeah. Valselka. Had a good borscht there.
Oh my God. So good. Yeah. Oh, I love mm-hmm. borscht. Now I just feel like we are on an episode of The Delicious Dish. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Do you remember that Saturday Night Live sketch from like the 90s?
Course.
Actually, speaking of, yeah, that's a queer coded sketch.
Times, great
that
fun.
Was like a
yeah.
gay. They were a gay couple.
Let's get into it. I wasn't even thinking SNL, but there were definitely, you know, this was pre-Kate McKinnon, but there was definitely something queer about the women of SNL.
Yeah.
And some of the sketches.
I think so. I mean, I think anytime you have a woman doing anything other than like trying to be fuckable for a man, it does suggest
exactly.
queerness, especially in the 90s, you know, because like,
yes.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Sherry O'Terry and like Anna Gasteyer.
I love her so much.
And Molly Shannon, like they were clearly not trying to perform any kind of like sexiness, you know? And
right.
And they were also expressing pretty drastic like desire, you know? It was like right. I need something. Like it just like, which I think is very queer to be like, okay, I'm going to center like my pleasure and my urges, but I'm not doing it in a way that's trying to look like sexy or cute, you know? Like,
right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like Mary Catherine Gallagher.
Yeah. yeah.
Totally queer, but doesn't know it. It's all performative.
Yeah.
I think.
Rachel yeah. Dratch being that like bro-y character oh. with Jimmy Fallon.
Mm-hmm.
So many Rachel Dratch characters.
Yeah,
are
actually,
definitely
every Rachel Dratch.
Every single one.
Yeah.
Debbie Downer is a
oh
lesbian.
My God,
for
yeah,
sure.
Definitely.
Oh my God.
No offense.
Debbie Downer.
She knows all about feline leukemia.
Debbie Downer is at Ginger's right now. She's like sidling up to someone and being like, you know, this place closed for a while and it's back, but will it last?
She's got two N95s on.
Yes. telling you about this new super strain of all the variants.
Oh my God. Yeah, she is. She's telling you like all the ways you can get it. And like how prevalent long COVID is becoming. That's Debbie Downer.
Oh,
for
yeah.
Sure. You know, that's increasing. The symptoms are going down, but long COVID is going up. Oh my God. Yeah. It's funny because it never actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because when I was suggesting this topic, it never would have occurred to me to include SNL in like 90s, like queer subtext, queer coded stuff. But that is so, yeah, it totally is. It totally was.
I mean, I think that was part of the draw for me looking back on, I mean, I would stay home on Saturday nights and like have friends over and we would all watch SNL, or we would watch SNL separately at home and talk about it the next day on the phone. Like, so obsessed with it. But I think for me, part of it was like, here are funny women who aren't just like thirsty for guys, or it's yeah. not all about them just like trying to get men or anything. They're just like being funny, and it's okay, and it's celebrated, and it's not just like you're the weird sexless best friend on the rom-com.
Yeah.
Like you're the star of the sketch.
Yes. Like centering that person, centering that character. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I definitely see that. Yeah. Yeah. It's, 90s are a weird time for queerness, right? Because like you have like Will and Grace, which is like, what is Will and Grace? It's like a circus. I mean, it's like, it is. I always thought, I mean, I loved Jack and Karen like growing up.
Me too.
I was obsessed.
That's why I watched.
And like, Karen's gay, right? Like,
oh, you know, she yeah. would make jokes about fucking women, and she being always bisexual, wanted yeah. to fuck Grace, right?
Did she? I don't remember. But
in the reboot, they lean in, like, I think she kisses Samira Wiley, comes on for like a guest spot, and they have
yeah.
a thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember her wanting to fuck Grace, but I do.
I don't know why that sticks in.
I mean, I feel like she was constantly like domming Grace. Like she was truly yeah, like,
well, that's
her.
For sure. But I think it was easy to do that in Will and Grace with Karen. I don't know. I just remember like Karen cracking these jokes about like things in her past, or like benders
yeah.
that led to like mm-hmm. maybe she slept with a woman, and it was okay because Karen was the floozy. So it's like she wasn't making these totally conscious decisions then to be queer. It was just like, I remember when I blah 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 something right. queer, because she was probably on a lot of pills or drunk, and that was that character.
The way she's positioned in the show is that like everyone else has never had sex, but she's the only one who's having sex, and she's like sort of like a surrogate and is having like all of the sex, because for some reason in that world, like no one else can ever have sex. Like she,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. But I remember that being like the central like gay show in the 90s. And like, there was so little like queer, like lesbian representation. There's like Chasing Amy, which is such a bad film.
Oh my God.
Which I watched so many times. It was such a bad film, and I watched it all the time.
I think I've only seen it once, but like, yeah, the actual queer content was so limited. I mean, you had Ellen, which I've never watched the final. I should make that my goal for 2022, is to watch that final season of Ellen where Ellen's actually gay, because I feel like that must be like such a big moment for queer television. But at that point, like a lot of us in our age range were like too young to be.
Yeah, I can't speak to
Ellen?
It. See, I don't know. I don't know what happened, because like I rarely watched Ellen. I just know that like when yeah. she came out, it was like a very tense moment, because I had a best friend whose parents were like Polish. She was like first generation, and her mom had like, I mean, she'll never hear this, so I can say this, right? Her mom had like a very like soft butch haircut, like short, but very like kind of femme. And like when Ellen came out, she was like, hot mad. She was real mad, because she loved Ooh. Ellen. She loved Ellen, and she felt like betrayed by it. And I was like, what is happening here? Like, I think your like hyper Catholic mom is gay. I never said this to the friend, but I was like, what is going on? But yeah, so in that same time frame, the sitcom that I was obsessed with that felt really gay to me actually was News Radio. Did you guys ever watch this? It's like,
yes,
people haven't watched it. Okay, you have.
I've watched all of News Radio.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, we have to talk about this. We can't use the whole podcast to talk about this, but I could. But okay. So then you will understand this. Melody, do you know who Dave Foley is?
Yeah.
Okay, Kids in the Hall, all that. Okay. So right. Dave Foley becomes like the boss at this radio station that is owned by this guy played by Stephen Root. It's just this like crazy rich dude who comes in and out. Phil Hartman is one of yeah. the like,
oh, was Andy Dick in this?
Yes,
Andy Dick.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Vague.
The woman who plays Beth is also amazing. I can't remember her name. She has red hair.
Vicki Lewis.
Yes. She's like, I would say she's like kind of like glam, like posh spicification of Kathy Griffin.
Yeah. Yes.
And Maura Tierney, who I adore, is like in a relationship with Dave Foley's character. And like, to me, they are like the lesbian couple of my childhood. Like they are such lesbians. They have such a lesbian relationship.
I've never thought about it, but it does make a lot of sense.
Yes. They are so gay. Their relationship is so gay. It's so queer. There's like an episode where they're fighting and something comes up about like sex or something. And like, should they talk about what turns them on? And like Dave confides in Beth. This is Dave Foley's character, is like, I can't tell Lisa what turns me on because then she won't do it anymore. And it's like, turns me on when she gets mad at me and she yells at me. It's just like, such a like queer, gay, like, it's like weirdly kinky, but like also very like innocent.
Yeah.
And like Dave Foley truly looks like a child in all of his suits. Like he really looks a lot like Kristen Stewart in like when she had her like short blonde hair. He's wearing these like big suits. And then yeah, Maura Tierney is like, she's just hot. And
oh my God, you're so right.
She's kind of muscular. Yeah. She's kind of muscular in like a hot way.
I always had a crush on Maura Tierney. Oh my God. So this all adds up. Yeah.
So
that I was probably picking up the vibes from news radio.
I think, you know, if I can just get people to start buying news radio off of the streaming service of their choice and rally the troops to fall in love with this show from the 90s, that would make me so happy. So I could have someone to talk to about it. So I'm obsessed with it.
I always associate news radio too with like Veronica's Closet. Like those were like two
God.
Similar yeah. kind of shows that.
And Wings. I associate those together.
And Suddenly Susan.
And Suddenly Susan. Yeah. Those all pair together well. I pulled up the picture from Wings literally 2 days ago because I was at Ginger's and there was a woman at the end of the bar who looked like the blonde from Wings and had like the exact same hairdo and it was like tripping me out and I was trying not to stare, but I'm like, this looks so much like her.
That's crazy.
In the best way possible.
Do you think that the 90s kind of like amplifying like friendship and like sort of like chosen family workplace friendship, is that like a queer pattern in 90s sitcoms? Is the 90s when that kind of became a bigger thing, or am I like just imagining that?
Before that was like family.
80s is like family ties, growing pains. Yeah, like I feel like it's like, well, I mean, you could call it anything you want. I guess if this was a different kind of podcast, we might be like, and that's when the nuclear family really disintegrated. But I do like if you look back to the 90s, it's like Seinfeld, Friends, and then like these workplace comedies, like kind of like that becomes the like ideal family, right? Is to have like
Murphy Brown,
a group
yeah,
of friends
yeah.
who love each other. It's like, yeah.
I love that.
That's a very interesting thesis.
Yeah.
I support it.
Could be.
But we're all like, I remember I learned this term in like film school. It was like spectatorship, like queer spectatorship, like we're looking at things in our case in like a queer gaze, like and extrapolating, and we're basically like appropriating 90s films because we had to make the representation that wasn't there for us. And
sure,
yeah, it's like, yeah, what are we looking for? And I think that is a good one. I've never thought of before when I
yeah.
go back and examine those, that friend chosen family angle.
Well, I would also argue though that like not only is it a queer gaze thing, but it is also like queer creators and writers creating in an atmosphere where they couldn't name it directly, right? Because like Friends was created by a couple of friends, not lovers. And like, I'm pretty sure at least one of them was gay.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
The original thing that I have messaged you guys that I wanted to talk about is so niche and so specific, and honestly, truly is me just projecting onto something. I don't know if I have like a clear thesis for this, but a 90s film that I was obsessed with and watched so many times with my best friend in high school is Empire Records. And
yes,
there is a, have you guys both seen it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
When you brought this up, when you were pitching it, I was like, I don't think I know what she's talking about.
Right. Because I think I might just have imagined it. Speaking of the queer gaze and projecting.
But no, what, walk me through it, because it'll come back to me.
Okay, so Renee Zellweger, and well, first of all, Empire Records takes place in like kind of a utopian workplace situation where all these teenagers have like this dream job of working at a record store. I think it's supposed to be in like New Jersey, because there's like kind of shots of a river at some point. And
yeah,
no, I thought it was funny.
Yeah, and there are all these
Delaware. It's Delaware. What? So that's close.
It's Delaware?
Yes.
Wow, this is actually blowing my mind. Okay, it's Delaware. Oh, that makes so much more sense, because there's like a part where it's like, you're getting out of here. And I'm like, what are they talking about? It's New Jersey. Who's like trying to make it out of New Jersey? But Delaware must feel like smaller to people. So that makes sense to me. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
No shade to the Delaware stands. But okay, so there are all these characters, which, I mean, I loved Ethan Embry's character in it so much, Mark. Like, he's so funny and goofy and stupid and great. Then there's Lucas, who's kind of like the weird, like, sage, but he, like, screws everything up by, like, losing all this money in Atlantic City.
Right.
And the, like, really pretty, like, sort of, like, lead girls who work there are Renee Zellweger and Liv Tyler. Okay. AKA Corey and Gina, which are like, I don't know. That's like, those names are very gay to me. Just a curious lesbian name.
Corey, definitely.
Okay. And then there are these two types, right? So Renee Zellweger is supposed to be like the bad girl, the slut. This is like pre-Jerry Maguire.
She's wearing a lot of black.
Yeah, but like actually
midriff
but
showing.
Actually, it's not really about her wearing black because Deb is then like takes it a step further because there's Deb who is like the depressed emo goth one who's angry about everything, comes into work with like a cute 90s bob, which I'll talk about later because that is also gay. And then she goes to the back room and shaves her head, which like who shaves their head at work?
So that was the queer for me. I was so focused on Robin Tunney.
Yeah, from The Craft. I mean, she's amazing.
From The Craft. Right.
Yeah, she's incredible. She's incredible.
So because The Craft is so gay, like in Empire with a shaved head and everything and like the moodiness, I'm like, oh, lesbian for sure. Like, so I overlooked Renee Zellweger.
I agree. She is lesbian. She is like the lesbian representation. And that is why she hates Renee Zellweger and Liv Tyler, because she sees them as like closeted gays who are like performing this like heterosexual thing. And she is like, ugh, you're idiots. Because she's so mean to them. She's really mean to them.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for her to be mean to them. Nothing has happened. They've never done anything to wrong her except like wear skorts, like those like 90s like skirts that kind of look like skorts that like they're kind of like short and plaid. And then like they wear like fuzzy sweaters or like cardigans. It's not a crime. Not a crime. But I think that Renee Zellweger and Liv Tyler are like secretly in love with each other because they drive to work together. They're like super bonded. Like Liv Tyler like gives her a cupcake like first thing in the morning. And Renee Zellweger's character is like weirdly like shepherding her on this like journey to like lose her virginity and is encouraging her to lose her virginity to this like aging pop star who is like a man with like a Susie Orman tan. Like he has a Susie Orman tan. He wears nothing but silk shirts. Like he is like, what is that? Who is gunning for their friend to lose it? What? Like I've seen girls like cheer each other on and be like, yeah, let's figure out if he likes you. But not like that is so weird. Like it's deranged.
She's just like, it's not a threat, not a threat.
Yeah, she wants her to lose
it to this
exactly
guy.
She wants her to lose her virginity with somebody who's like a non-emotional threat because they have such an intense relationship. She lends her a bra, which is revealed later after Liv Tyler is rejected by Rex Manning. They like go to lunch and she like angrily takes her bra off underneath her sweater and like throws it at her. And Renee Zellweger is like, it's okay. We'll get you someone. Like there are tons of guys. And she's like, I'm not like you. I don't have to go do every guy I see. And then they have like a fight about sex. Like, and then later Liv Tyler like has a mental breakdown, like a full on mental breakdown because Renee Zellweger ends up hooking up with Rex Manning. She has a mental breakdown. They have to hold her down. She's kicking and screaming. Losing her mind. She's also been like chowing down speed all day. Sorry, if that's not a gay romantic like breakdown fight, I don't know what is. I think they're in love with each other. I really do.
100%. I'm convinced. I would like to see an argument against this, but that's very compelling. That's very compelling.
I've never thought about that movie in that way. What I thought was queer about it was just like, yeah, the poster, like that's where I stopped. I was like, no, look at Liv Tyler's hot outfit.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Gay. I'm renting it from Blockbuster.
Well, also it is possible that I was just attracted to both of them and I projected this relationship onto them. That is entirely possible. And I would not say that Liv Tyler nor Renee Zellweger has a terribly like queer coded career, unlike some other 90s people where it's like, oh, okay. Like this is.
Except the music video with Liv Tyler and Alicia Silverstone.
I was just going to say, but then I felt uncomfortable because she was too young and it was her dad.
I know.
Well, yeah. Speaking of Alicia Silverstone. Okay. So Clueless, my favorite, my actual favorite queer coded character of all time.
Oh, Cher's a lesbian.
No, is Ty. Ty's my favorite lesbian. Cher's your favorite?
Oh yeah, Ty's so Cher. No, I love Ty so much. Especially, I just watched the Brittany Murphy documentary and just really forgot how much I love her as an actress and the character Ty. But I thought you were going to argue that Cher was a lesbian because her lack of interest in the boys. But okay, yeah, Ty blatantly gay.
I mean, Cher and Dion might be, but I will never get over like her performance as Ty. Like, so bubbly and fun and amazing. And I love her and Travis, the like, the Marvin.
Travis! Let's go, Travis!
when he looks at her art. And it's Marvin the Martian. God.
She's so gay. You guys, I never had straight friends before.
Yeah. Yeah, which I always thought was like gay. And then I realized that was like friends who don't do drugs.
Like, someone not had to doing. To me.
She's from New York. She's gay. Oh my gosh. I just love Ty so much.
I just watched Girl Interrupted last night to kind of prepare a little bit, but I also need an excuse to rewatch it because the last time I watched Girl Interrupted was before my first time kissing another woman. So I was 17 and
another brag.
The way
yeah
I know
you've had sex, you've kissed. We got it, Carolyn.
but I always tell the story of how it happened that me and this girl who was like my first girlfriend, we were on her waterbed, as you do.
Oh my God.
And we were watching Girl Interrupted, which she had seen who knows how many times before. And we were holding hands. And then in the scene where Winona Ryder kisses Angelina Jolie's character, we both like squeezed each other's hand at the same time and then waited till the end of the movie and started kissing. Now, in my memory of this movie, I thought the kiss between Winona Ryder and Angelina Jolie was way more intense and hot and was like this really. But then in my teenage brain, I didn't see much of that. So like, I just remembered it being like a way more epic kiss. And rewatching it, I was like, oh.
You were disappointed?
That's not it at all. Yeah. I was like, the whole time, I was like, Cecilia was finishing up some work on her computer. I'm like, babe, it's going to happen. Look, they're going to kiss. They're going to kiss. They're going to kiss. And I'm like, oh, maybe they do it again. I don't know. That's not how I remember it.
Describe the kiss. I can't remember this scene at all. I have no memory of this.
It's kind of like the kiss that like a straight girl would give another straight girl when she's just like drunk and happy. And like your friend does something like really nice for you or something. And you're like, oh, like kind of like it wasn't. I don't know.
It wasn't sexual.
I remember it being like a lot more sexual. Like, yes, Winona Ryder's character is obsessed with, I think Lisa is the name of Angelina Jolie's character. And she's very upset. And then they all, like, that movie, I think is, it's hard because it's like so many like deep issues that they're exploring in the movie, but that all these women in this institution are all kind of like obsessed with one another in some shape or form, but it's also like all they have because they're in an institution, so it's a little bit tricky.
Did you ever read the book Girl Interrupted?
No.
I read the book and I'm trying to remember, like, how did I find that book? Because I must have been pretty young. I read the book before the movie came out. So Girl Interrupted is after Gia. And I was obsessed with Gia because Gia was the first time it was like, oh, she's actually gay.
Well, there's no subtext there. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was obsessed with Gia.
No, the first time she's gay, and we talked about this because we did have a gay 90s episode, but was Foxfire.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about Foxfire until we recorded that episode. And then I went and watched it and I was like, oh my God, like this is the genesis of like Angelina Jolie as a queer icon. Like,
I actually haven't seen Foxfire. That feels crazy to me that I missed it.
Yeah.
We only just got with it. I mean, people had written in here and there telling us to watch it. And yeah, I'm shocked it took so long for us
right.
because It's so gay. And that's what started Jenny Shimizu and Angelina Jolie, right?
Yeah, they became a couple IRL after doing that movie together. So that was 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And Girl Interrupted was 99. And Gia was
right before.
98.
Yeah, okay. So I knew about Hackers. I watched Hackers. And I also...
Oh, my God.
I also watched a really bizarre movie that I think I own. I think I own a digital copy of Playing by Heart, which is Angelina Jolie and Ryan Phillippe. And she gives this like...
I gasped.
I mean, it is something else.
I was obsessed.
I mean, that is a gay couple, if I've ever seen one.
Yes.
And it's like they meet at a club and like... He's like, I only dance alone. But she gives him this speech in the movie about how talking about love is like dancing about architecture. And it's like, it's such a weird dramatic speech, but I ate it up as a child. I was so into it. And I just, oh my God, I've watched that movie so many times. But yeah, Angelina Jolie was like the first, like, I guess like openly gay woman besides Ellen, I guess. It was Ellen and then Angelina Jolie, and that was it. Well, there's like what, Katie Lang and like Melissa Etheridge.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there were actors in the 90s who, like, no matter what movie they were in or what show, I feel like it would read as queer because of them. And some of them, one of them, Angelina Jolie, was out as bisexual. Others were straight and still identify as straight, I guess, till this day. And then others were closeted at the time. So, like, anything Clea DuVall's in.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Clea, like, DuVall. Her characters always read super queer because she just looks so gay.
For me, who was nine, like, a little younger in the 90s, Christina Ricci. Like, that's
definitely.
That was my
Christina Ricci's for
gay
sure
90s experience.
Oh, my God. So we were talking about this before. Carolyn was saying, like, her entire career is queer coded, but none of the characters are gay. But, like, Now and Then, Adam's Family, like, yeah, everything she's
Casper.
Like, Casper. Very gay.
Anytime she's kissing Devon Sawa, it's
it's
gay. Yes.
Oh my God, my first gay crush, Devon Sawa. Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing too, is there's like these teen dream boys that all had that haircut that all kind of looked like soft butch women. And like that also made everything feel like Jonathan Brandis and stuff. Like they were also pretty.
Writer Strong, right. Gotta give a shout out.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Writer Strong. Like like you mean because like they were pretty, and then it's like safe. It's safe to like the pretty person because it's boy, right? It's like
yeah. And they were pretty, but their hair was like a little bit longer, and there was something about like they were always also like not like all the other guys. So there's like something like a
like
little
in touch
bit different
with their emotions.
Yeah, and then you put them across from like Christina Ricci. Christina Ricci has sometimes played queer characters, like, and also has like a lot of same sex kisses throughout her career. But I've done a deep dive, and I haven't found anything that she would be like. That she's ever said she was bisexual or something, or has been with a woman.
You're on the case. You're like, I've researched this.
Well, you kind of wonder.
It's so weird. It's weird how things are kind of like in cultural orbit, and then you don't like know. Like, I didn't know about Yellow Jackets, but for some reason, I recently thought of Christina Ricci, and I was like, huh, I wonder what she's up to. And I went to her Instagram, and I was like, oh my God, she's so straight. Like, I got like kind of. Like, you know, like whiplash of, because it's just like sometimes people are like making it very clear, like how straight they are in like their presentation or like what they're posting about.
Right.
It's just kind of like aggressively. And I was just like, oh gosh, that's not what I saw for her.
Right.
But then I watched Yellow Jackets, which I think she's fabulous on, who she was as a child. And she's still a fabulous actress. I'm not saying anything to like put down or like degrade or like, she's so talented. But like who she was, like the promise of that is not who she became to me. Like she really, and I don't know if this is like Hollywood actress trying to hold on to youth by staying like a certain way and looking a certain way for the public eye. But like, I feel like she was very like, her presence was very big and strong as a child. And I feel like her adult self, at least on Instagram and in her energy, is like kind of a shrinking of that. And I don't get it. I'm like, what? What? But you were so like,
I see cool. That.
Like you were so like,
yeah,
yeah. She just had all this like almost aggro energy.
Spunk.
Yeah. But like, you know, maybe this is because of like Now and Then and Adam's Family, but she was like ready to throw hands. And like, I mean, her whole relationship right. with that guy and Adam's Family, is it Adam's Family Values? When she goes to camp, she's like, yeah. well, I'm going to murder you.
Yeah. yeah.
She invented that. She invented like Miss Entry, that character.
yeah. You know, I mean, this isn't 90s, but Yellow Jackets and like maybe kind of spoiler. I don't know. Like her character, Misty, does keep a woman prisoner in her basement. Like,
that's true. Yeah. And she is like basically stalking like 3 to 4 women at a time. I mean, she is stalking like, these women. They do not want to have anything to do with her. And she's just like,
she is watching Jenny Lewis have sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Wait, Jenny Lewis? No, Juliet Lewis. Jenny Lewis is Rilo Kiley. And I was like, well, I wouldn't mind seeing that, but.
Sorry, my mind is still on Firefox. Jenny Lewis is in Firefox.
She is?
I meant Juliet
yes,
Lewis.
You have
oh
to
my
watch.
God. I love Jenny Lewis. Yeah. Jenny Lewis is amazing.
I mean, so many shows I feel like have to go back to the 90s and the 80s to get before cell phones, because a cell phone fixes so many problems in communications that drive a story forward.
Yeah.
You know, so like to get rid of that as a possible solution to anything, you have to, we're just going to have so many shows moving forward that are like in the 90s.
Yeah. It also does feel like, I mean, because, okay. In the 90s, like Wonder Years was a big show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, it does feel like the nostalgia is always like about 2 to 3 decades back. So like,
sure,
it's like
sure.
in a very sobering way, the 90s is now that far away. No, so I think it's like very popular because like we are very old. I think it's interesting to see the 90s used not in like an accurate way, but more of like a fantasy way. It's like, of course, we want this crash to have taken place in this time period because that's what feels like right. But then like they're not in the world. So I think they can kind of like.
Right. Yeah.
It's just kind of there as like almost a pleasant like aesthetic device, but not a real exploration of that time period because they're not in the world, you know, they're like isolated.
Right.
So
other actors that come to mind, we mentioned Winona Ryder, of course.
Which I do want to address 90s hair.
Yes.
Let's go.
Well, there's a very specific like 90s bob that a lot of actresses wore that I felt like was a very queer coded like hair choice. It was like Drew Barrymore, Winona Ryder, Cameron Diaz in There's Something About Mary has this like 90s bob, and I felt like it was such a like, I don't know if it's just like the way that my sexuality was like developing at that time, but it was such a thing to me. I would see a girl with that hair and be like, they're here, it's happening. If you look at like any 90s pictures of like Winona Ryder when she's dating, Johnny Depp, like that
in a leather jacket with that haircut,
if you look at them,
those pictures,
like they look exactly like Williamsburg lesbians looked in like 2008. It's like a weird time warp thing. Like they are a gay couple. But yeah, I got like a bob haircut when I think I was in eighth grade, and I felt so grown up. I felt so like cool. You got one too?
I got a 90s haircut, short bob haircut in the eighth grade. It was, 2001 or something, but all my friends said I look like Professor Snape, so I grew it out.
What? Wow, they shamed you.
Yeah, Margaret.
You.
Yeah. The yearbooks came out, and my best friend to this day, dude, you look like Snape. And I just recently got the haircut again. I have it again. Have it right now.
Great.
If I do a middle part, it's very Snape, actually, and I can't unsee it.
So I feel like the bob, yeah, it was like this like sassy bad girl, but like cutesy thing at the same time. Like, and yeah, Drew Barrymore, Winona Ryder.
Yeah. Neve Campbell at times.
Neve Campbell, yes.
For Wild Things.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, Wild Things.
Had kind of a...
What a psychotic film.
I mean, yeah, Neve Campbell always read queer to me.
Absolutely.
What about all of those like TGI Friday?
Oh, well, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, gayest show of all time. She lives with her aunts who are very queer-coded. Hilda and Zelda.
Oh, yeah. Salem is a gay man.
Oh, Salem is, yeah.
Salem is for sure a gay man.
I love Salem so much. Me too. The only male comedian I support is Salem.
Pre-vaccine lockdown, Halloween, I spent Halloween watching a super cut of just someone on YouTube put only Salem scenes from the beginning of the series. Like, you can just watch the Salem scenes cut together.
That's very gay.
Yeah. Wait, this is available? Like, I could just go.
It was at least Halloween 2020. It was. That's what I did.
Oh, that sounds amazing. That sounds really good. Really satisfying. Yeah, no, Salem's the best.
Kimmy Gibbler is a lesbian who's obsessed with DJ.
Oh yeah. That's why she's always like breaking into their house. She's like truly unwelcome.
She hates Steve. Yeah.
She hated Steve.
Yeah. She hated Steve, who was a cutie. And
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else was on that lineup?
I don't know, but
Family Matters.
Oh, Boy Meets World.
Step by Step.
Oh, Step by Step. Yeah. With Bronson Pinchot.
I mean, okay, Topanga has lesbian vibes, right? Like,
sort of. Yeah, she's.
Angela, to me, she felt like Angela had queer vibes.
In
Boy Meets World, Sean's Ryder Strong's girlfriend in the show.
Oh, okay. My mind went to Angela from Who's the Boss. I'm like, well, yes, but
I don't know if this is. No, it is 90s. Third Rock from the Sun.
Yes,
like the queerification of the family, because all the roles are fucked up because they're actually aliens.
Yep.
And right. I mean, is it Kirsten or Kristen? Kristen Johnson? Johnson?
Yeah.
She's amazing. Sally.
Yeah.
She's like kind of shocked at being a woman all the time. And she has this like amazing, like deep, like manly voice, but then it's also like so incredibly sexy, and they like dress her up like high femme all the time. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, like the girlfriend next door kind of energy, and he is dating has a couple of girlfriends on that show who are the first one. I don't know what happened to her. They got rid of her. I don't know if they like, I don't know. It makes me wonder when they fire a child. It really makes you wonder, like, how hard was that child to work with, you know? But they replaced her with Larissa Olenek, Alex Mack.
Right.
We could
go
on about.
Yeah, I'm only talking about queer coded characters. But but like that. Yeah, Third Rock from the Sun is a wild ride. I love that show. I love that show so much.
Rugrats, Phil and Lil's mom was a lesbian, and she will be openly gay in this reboot they're doing.
Oh, that's so cool.
So that makes me wonder, like, was that a case you were talking about of like a closeted writer kind of projecting that onto that character?
Right.
Because that was just such a dyke.
Yeah, I do wonder. I wonder, like, I mean, how do you research that?
We get them on the podcast
talk to them.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, who, like, I mean, there must have been gay writers on many different shows who were, you know, yeah, I wonder who was, what choices they were making, what stories they were telling in the context of, like, this, like, straight world story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, there's always been so many queer people working in Hollywood. And even now, like, I know people who write for probably shouldn't say this because then some conservative is going to get a clip and be like, see, but I know like queer people who write for animation that are like, oh, yeah, you write everything really gay, but it's like the kids don't know that it's gay. But it's a lot of like gay writers doing like clearly this is gay. You know, like I'm not talking about She-Ra, which is like explicitly gay, but like other animated things. Like there's a lot that these writers can kind of like get away with. And it's like, if you know, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like whoever was writing behind Ashley Spinelli from Recess.
That is crazy. I was literally just thinking about Recess.
She was just so gay to me. I had no vocabulary around it, but I was so drawn to Ashley in that cartoon.
I love Spinelli and I felt so intimidated by her. I was like, she's so cool. How could I ever be that cool? Which is an insane thought to have about an animated character.
But she watching it. I'm like, she can tell I'm gay.
Yeah.
She sees me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I do wonder, like, in terms of if you think of like queerness as just like deviating from like a set norm, right? And like that being the like wink, the like nod to like, yeah, you can be something else. I do think the 90s were like a really interesting time for that. There was like kind of like a blunt, like goofy, like feminism that was like girl power. But from that, we had like female characters who were being really different. Like, I mean, not to take it back to news radio, but like, I loved that Lisa was really good at math and stuff. Like she was a nerd. But she was like also really cool and good at her job. And wow, I am a Capricorn. But that wasn't. I guess that was to me like exciting that a character could be that and be like liked and be like desirable and part of this like office family in a way where it was like, oh, yeah, cool. You fit in here, you know? Like, you don't have to be, like, bad at math and, like, kind of dumb and, like, oh, whatever my boyfriend wants. Like, you can be, like, kind of a pain in the ass, you know, in a positive way.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that was being celebrated more in the 90s was kind of you didn't have to be we weren't centering, like, the popular girl or anything like that. And it was, like, when I think of, like, She's All That and stuff, I don't know, just tropes, but there always has to be something, I don't know. I'm once, it's like, oh, there's something different about her. And then you have, like, you know, young baby queers who don't know we're gay being like, there is something different about her. And then, but then all the male characters are like, yeah, she's not like the other girls. I'm going for her. If she gets a makeover, she's going to be the one. Or, like...
Yeah.
Or like, I'll tame her or I'll get her and
take her glasses off. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That trope of like a woman who must be like confused or like manipulated into submission is so weird and fucked up. And yeah. I mean, I haven't watched that movie in a long time, but it's just off. It's like, also, it's so like stupid because it's like these gorgeous women. It's like they really don't look bad at all to begin with. And then you like, you take off the glasses and suddenly. Oh, but speaking of gorgeous women in glasses, we didn't talk about Sandra Bullock at all, who is like, like amazing, like not queer 90s representation.
Yes, for sure.
And
when did Miss Congeniality come out?
I think late 90s, but I know she was in this movie that I watched when I was a kid called like Love Potion Number 9, I think.
Oh my God. You know I used to rent that from the library.
That movie is so goofy.
Yes.
Like the two nerds who like accidentally make everyone fall in love with them, which is like kind of the opposite of that plot, right? It's the opposite of like the girl who has to like become hot plot. It's like actually society needs to like realize we're already hot. But it's such a funny movie because isn't it just like so chaotic, right? Like
I didn't see it. 1992.
Yeah, super old. Yeah, they just make a potion, these boys, and anyone who takes it falls in love with them. I'm trying to remember why I liked it so much.
Because she's probably like,
because Sandra Bullock was in it.
Because she's amazing. I mean, she's so funny. She's so charming. She's delightful, but she's so good at being that character who's kind of like, oh, what is happening to me? Like, oh, this isn't what I meant. She's also one of my favorite like feel good movies is While You Were Sleeping. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Such a classic. Really? Oh, she's
it's where the guy, he's in a coma.
Peter Gallagher.
And Peter Gallagher's in a coma, and she like had a crush on him and like went to see him in the hospital, but had to lie and say that she was his fiance in order to get into the room with him. And then the family comes.
Well, she rescues him because like he falls onto the track.
Right.
And she like saves him from getting hit by a train. So, but he does have like a concussion. Yeah.
Oh, was it like an L track? Was it Chicago?
Yeah. Yeah. She's like,
I'm just the vaguest memories.
She's
of all
the station agent. She like sells the tokens. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite movies of hers for sure. I don't know. Like, was it Speed that made her seem gay? I'm trying to think. Like her just driving a bus. Like,
I think it's her like her jawline.
Right, right.
And she's like very, I don't know, she's just a very attractive woman with like, that kind of face. But she's she's so interesting as like a non-queer queer icon because she does two kind of types. And one is like the net speed, like so strong and on it and like on a mission and like going to make things happen. And then the other is kind of like this earnest, goofy, like, oh, I don't know, like bashful in love. Like she's incredibly endearing. She's just so sweet.
Like, yeah.
She's sweet, but also really strong, which is very lesbian. She's tender.
Is there anything else that we didn't hit on of like why everything felt so gay
in the 90s? Well, I don't know if everything in the 90s felt so gay. I think I just like kind of obsessed over specific things in there, in my own child queerness.
Because it was all we had. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe like one thing we didn't talk about is we talked about Rosie, but we didn't talk about why she was so appealing in the 90s. And I do wonder, like, even in her like closetedness on the show, on the Rosie O'Donnell show, there was something about her energy. I felt like she was kind of like the gay mom that I didn't have, you know, like she was really like solid and sturdy and like reliable and no nonsense, but also just like so nurturing towards her audience. She reminded me so much of my fourth grade teacher, Ms. Hagler, who I don't think is a lesbian, but had that energy. And like, oh my God, I think it's her birthday today. Another Capricorn.
You know your fourth grade teacher's birthday?
That is the gayest thing I've ever heard.
He messages me sometimes.
There was something of like an authority figure to Rosie on that show. But then the other thing that she said before, like everybody who worked on the show was gay.
Oh, really?
Like it's like Judy Gold, like everybody who's writing for the show, all the producers. She said whenever she had the opportunity to hire people, she would hire like women and gay men. But then a lot of the women she knew were also gay. So that's why everything was like Broadway and like gay icons and
Barbara,
those things were so celebrated.
And the Blazers,
the Blazers
definitely helped, not just on the Rosie show, I mean like that entire decade.
I mean if we want to get into queer coding, we can talk about Ricky Lake we'll wait till Ricky joins us. When Ricky's ready to
talk about it with Ricky.
So much. But I do think, you know what? Now I'm thinking about it. And like the joy on that show is like a very like queer joy. You know, it's so different.
For sure.
It's so different from like Regis and Kathy Lee or like it's just there's like a playfulness to it and an irreverence. And like, it was just something really, really special. And I think it spoke to young queer people for sure.
Well, and she also wasn't afraid to get political or even this isn't political, but like all the stuff with breast cancer, like Jay Leno's not doing that, you know, like her advocacy and her passion for things like, you know, adoption, fostering breast cancer, then eventually gun violence. You know, she was very outspoken about that. And that's so queer.
Yeah. And she was outspoken about it, not in a like, there was no posturing, you know, like right. when Rosie talks about a cause, you can feel how she feels about the cause. Like she really yeah. cares. Like it is a gut feeling yeah. of like, we've got to do something. Like this cannot.
Yeah.
Like there's a little bit of anger there. There's like a deep concern. It's not like the kind of sanitized relationship that people tend to have with those like stickier topics where people are like, okay, so we're going to talk about this now. And like, oh, breast cancer. And like, oh, it's so important. You know, like there's this kind of distancing that happens. Whereas Rosie, like she goes into it. Like she's like,
yeah,
she's taking it very seriously. She gets really deep about it. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She cares. We love her.
There you go. Rosie shaped the 90s.
We started off talking about Rosie, and I think it's apt we end talking about Rosie, right?
Yeah, it all comes back to
our good friend Roe.
Our dear, dear friend. Friend of the show.
Close, personal friend. Oh, yeah.
Oh, where can people follow you on social media?
Yeah, follow me. Sure. Sure.
If you want it. Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter. I don't tweet that much these days, but yeah, it's just at Naomi Reggae. Naomi with a Y. And yeah, my Instagram's the same, at Naomi Reggae. I am writing again, so like who knows what that will lead to, but I'm yeah, you know, you can go read my old articles.
And we'll probably revive the L Word Christmas Carol. You know, that wasn't just a one-time thing. So
oh, yeah,
we'll put that on.
I would love that. Oh man. Again. Mean, so much fun. So much, such a silly, joyful moment. And so nice to do
so
it. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I know that like, you know, people might have different feelings about this, but I'm so glad we made it in under the wire right before Omicron.
Like
really
just under,
hours.
Yeah, like, hours the wire. I'm so glad that we were able to like be together in person. That was special.
Yeah. Yeah, that was such a great night. Also for any listeners interested, are your DMs open?
Oh. Yeah, why not? Sure, shoot your shot.
You never know.
If you have a 90s bob, especially, slide in.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I truly yes. do not have a type. If you lined up everyone I've dated, it's like, yeah, which that should be encouraging to you. So if you're hearing this and you're like, I don't know if she would like me. Probably. I probably would. Probably.
Amazing. Thank you so much for diking out with us today.
Oh, thank you guys. Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
Whenever we do episodes like this, I always know that there's so much that we miss. So maybe on the Instagram post, I want to hear what you all thought was so gay in the 90s that you had really no reason in thinking like, oh, this is a lesbian thing, like the news radio. Like I want that deep cut
yeah.
of queer subtext to get me thinking about something.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Okay, time for our listener question. This week's question comes from a patron. So you know that went straight to the top of the list.
Yes.
It was a long one. Okay. So we're going to kind of
paraphrase,
read one chunk of it, at least to start. My partner of a little over a year does not want kids, and I'm not sure whether I want kids. Parentheses, we're in our late 20s. We talked about it and decided we'll figure out together how to work through this potential mismatch at some later date. But I'm having a really hard time figuring out what I want. I grew up always wanting kids, but in the last 5 or so years, I've started to reconsider because of the impending climate disaster.
So this is where then the listener went into a lot of detail about the pros and cons of having kids. But we're going to move on to like the
yeah
question for time. So
okay. Question. I want to make sure that I'm not just finding ways to convince myself that I don't want kids because that's the path of least resistance with my girlfriend, and it's the path that leads to less conflict.
At the same time, I do think it's true that I've been deeply socialized by a patriarchal society to want kids. And I think it's worth questioning slash unlearning that and considering alternatives. So any advice on how I figure out what I really, truly want? Carolyn, I defer to you. I can't give this advice because I am in a position where I need this advice. And I relate so hard to this question.
I'm in my late 20s.
Because I'm definitely in my late 20s too.
Yes, me also, someone in my late 20s. I'm so qualified to give this advice.
I don't know.
I do have a lot of thoughts, and I think some of them might be helpful because being a little bit older, being an elder queer, elder millennial, geriatric millennial, being a geriatric millennial.
Yeah. Elder queer, geriatric millennial.
Yeah.
So wise.
I have thought a lot about this and am preparing my body slowly to get ready for what's going to be hopefully my last IVF cycle, because my wife and I do want to have kids, but it wasn't a clear-cut road. A couple things I want to say off the top. One, yes, are we deeply socialized by a patriarchal society to want kids? Sure, but like also it's more than that. Like, I don't think that it's just like men being like, women must have kids anymore. Like, there is a biological component to it. It does have, or like having kids is like what reproduction. It's we're mammals.
Life.
Yeah, like it's what we do as a species. Not saying everybody has to do it, but I don't think you could be like, ooh, the patriarchy's at it again. So the other thing too about, you know, I'm starting to reconsider because of the impending climate disaster. I've said it once, I'll say it again. There's never been a good time in history to have kids. The history of humankind, there is always the worst things going on. This is part of the human experience, but, you know, in like there used to be a threat of nuclear destruction. Remember the Holocaust? There's still climate. Yeah, but there's always some type of horrible threat. It never seems like, oh, what a great time to bring a human into this world that's full of genocide, you know? You just can't think that way, or else nobody would have ever had kids.
We have the internet now, and we're hyper, hyper aware of just how truly awful it is, and...
Right. It's fine.
Have a kid, don't have seven. I think let's move past that. Both my parents come from those size families. I don't know. You're not being great for the environment.
I don't know. Do what you want. You only live once. If seven kids is your
kid.
you have to ask yourself, and yes, it is hard to know the answer, but like, don't let those kind of factors influence you of like, am I doing this because of the patriarchy? Like, do you want to raise another human? And it is a hard thing to know, because there was a point where I thought like, of course I do. And then when I was married to my ex-wife, I realized that I didn't want to have a kid with that person. So I talked myself out of this and imagined a life without children and being like, oh, great, I'll go on vacation all the time, all these things. And then I met Cecilia, and she was like, I really want kids. And I was like, I actually don't know if I want kids. So was in that position. And then I thought, you know, what's the most important thing in life to me? And I love family. I have always loved kids. I would love the chance to raise a kid and have a family like that. For me, I think that there's something very beautiful and good about it. I also can't say I'm like 100% sure this is the best idea. Like, at some point, you just have to make a choice in life. And you can get really crippled when you're looking at choices and being like, what if I make the wrong one? Like, I don't know, like, if there's a wrong choice. Like, yes, it's wrong to have kids if you're in a place where you cannot raise them. Like, if you don't have, if you're struggling with things that you couldn't be a decent parent, then no, don't have kids. But all that aside, it's like, sometimes you just have to make a choice and be like, all right, this is the choice I made and let's make it work. It's never going to feel like you 100% know. It's never going to feel like, yes, I'm positive this is the best decision. I'm never going to have doubts about it. And I'm never going to worry what if, or I'm never going to think about the other side. Like, that's just human nature too. Every choice you make, there's always this other side of it. And to keep moving forward in life, you just have to pick, be like, this is what I committed to and I'm doing it. That's my take.
Woo! All right. Also to consider, if you're in the States, you're going to need to have a kid to have someone to help take care of you as you die. It's not going to be any kind of government program. It's not going to be, it's going to be bleak. We don't care about our elderly at all here. And you just need that advocate. Not necessarily by blood, but
well, but then also having a kid can be costly in the U.S. with healthcare. But, you know, if you have the resources, and also, like, as a queer person, if you're not partnered with somebody who produces sperm, that can make things more complicated. So there are a lot of factors to consider there. But in terms of, like, do you really want kids? Like, if your partner really doesn't want the same things of you, because I've heard people, I've had friends who have talked themselves out of wanting kids because their partner didn't want them. And it's never a good thing. I'm like, you are not able to have your actual needs met by your partner. Like, part of having your needs met is, like, being on the same page about those things. And it's not, you know, it's nobody's fault. Like, some people really don't want kids, and that's totally, totally fine. I get it, but don't try to talk yourself out of it for someone else, because let me tell you, that relationship won't work. You're going to wake up one day and be like, why the fuck did I, you know, like late 20s, the clock is ticking. You know, I'm down to like 3 eggs left in my body. So, like, you gotta make sure you're on the same page as someone.
I know. Yeah. Again, I can't say much. I'm going through this too. I do need to go to a couple of therapy. Like, and I do. I just, not right now, but she's older than me. And then I feel like residual, it's like guilt.
Yeah.
And it did break my heart. She was like, well, then, like, I'd rather have you than, like, kids. Like, she wouldn't, even though, right, like, she was, like, kind of, like, born to, like, she has a gift, like, with children. Like, she,
it's
needs
the same
to
exact
have
thing with Cecilia. Cecilia, like, she was like, well, I said, what if I don't want kids? And she was like, well, I want to be with you, and that's the most important thing. But yeah, if you see Cecilia with kids, it's a lot like Allie. Like, yeah, kids just love her. She loves them. She's so great at playing with kids. Like, and then we love being around kids together. And I just had to really sit with myself and be like, what does my life look like, you know, in 10 years and in 20 years? A big thing for me, actually, that really solidified it, that I was like, no, I want kids, was when, strangely enough, when my grandmother died, who I was very close to. And my grandmother meant so, so much to me. And I thought, like, maybe more than a mom, I want to be a grandma one day. I'm like, I want to be that person that my grandma was in my life. I want to be that person.
Good point.
For someone else. And that, and then thinking, like, I remember looking around at my grandma's funeral and looking at all our family. I'm like, oh, all these great people who I love so much are in my life because my grandma had kids. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
and it was just, it was a very powerful thing. I'm like, wow, we all exist because of this woman. And my grandpa, you know, he had a hand in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was like, what a crazy thing. Like, what a great, beautiful thing is life. So that was the deciding thing for me. I hope this helped, but please, please, please do not talk yourself out of something that you want because of what somebody else wants. That's never going to be good for you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
cue circle of life. Play us out.
Or just somebody hum it. I don't know. We don't have the rights. Okay, keep doing that while I... You can find us on Dyking Out. I can't. I can't talk over that melody. It's too beautiful. It's too beautiful. Okay, now send us your questions, dykingout@gmail.com. Follow us on social media at Dyking Out. You can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at Melody Kamali.
Thank you so much for dyking out with us this week.
See you next Tuesday.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the past?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridans, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.